Hey there, I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there, Guy.
Hello, Margaret. Margaret, you have a rather large eye on your shirt today.
I do. It can either bless you or put a hex on you.
I feel like a beam may shoot out from it at any moment.
Very Parsons Project.
Thank you. Yeah, it is the eye in the sky or the eye on my chest.
And also here, you just heard her, is pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Toxin.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
Karen, how is your official summer going? It's officially summer now.
It's so officially summer. I've started wearing shorts, and I'm losing myself in sports, which I'll talk about later.
Oh, that's exciting. Also, workplace shorts started at my workplace and were not started by me, and I was dazzled. Usually, I make a transgressive shorts choice, and then I feel bad about myself, but it was inaugurated by others, my boss, no less.
When you start with shorts, do you go a print, or do you go solid?
I go with solid.
Start conservative.
Yes, yeah. Let's ramp them up to this. Also with us is New York Times columnist and best-selling author and my dear friend, Ms. Lindy West.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Lindy, but you don't live here. You live in Seattle.
It's true.
Why are you in Los Angeles?
I think I'm allowed to say that I'm making a television show.
That's very exciting. Yeah.
Someone would have called me and said, don't tell anyone you're making a television show, right?
Where
is it on IMDb? Then it counts.
I haven't checked. That's a great cue.
Where will we be watching this television show?
It's on Hulu.
Uh-huh.
And it's about me.
Uh-huh.
Kind of.
How exciting.
I know. It's very strange.
Will there be lots of scenes where the actress playing you is silently DMing with someone, and then underneath it says, she's talking to Guy right now?
Yes.
Good. That's very important. All right. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about the new AMC series, Dietland. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest gents. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler.
Yes.
Peggy.
Just for this show, just this one
just
time.
Just for this show, Peggy. What are you all about this week?
I have been caught up, like all of us, in what is going on politically. It's been hard to focus on anything cultural because the political moment is just slapping us in the face. And the latest turn of it has been the spate of protests carried out by kind of regular people in their environs when somebody like Sarah Huckabee Sanders comes in and wants to eat a cheese plate at your fancy restaurant. She was kicked out of a place called Red Hen a few days ago, and it made the news because she tweeted about it, and she seemed quite put out. And then it's kicked off this discussion on what is okay to do as far as pushing back against the Trump administration. And I thought a particular salient argument about this was presented by Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times in an op-ed called "We Have a Crisis of Democracy, Not Manners," because so much of this has revolved around what's civil, you know, what is polite, what is, what is the proper decorum when you're being pushed around by the Trump administration and they're putting migrant children in cages. I think what's interesting that she touched upon in this piece is that so many of these protests, like the one that also happened against Kirstjen Nielsen in a Mexican restaurant where people came in there and said, you know, if children can't eat in peace, you can't eat in peace, is that she talked about the sites that these are all happening in, which is cultural spaces, mm-hmm. right? These restaurants, the movie that Pam Bondi went to go see, the Mr. Rogers documentary, and people voiced their concerns to her and after the movie theater. And she talked about basically, you know, these are places that culture makers, culture producers, these are sort of like their places. It's their safe spaces almost in a sense. And so when somebody comes in, it's almost like a transgression against the place. And it's okay to say, you're not welcome here.
Yeah. The other thing that's so interesting to me is that these conservatives who were endorsing Hobby Lobby's right to have a corporate religion or Masterpiece Cake's right to not give a cake to gay people are saying, hey, but no, you can't do that to us, which is an interestingly Christian expectation of people taking the high road. Mm-hmm. And I guess for a long time, like, liberals were trying to take the high road. I just don't know, like, why anyone should be able to expect that.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm not advocating at all for any kind of violent treatment of these people whatsoever. But I think, like, peaceful, disruptive, inconveniencing these people is totally fair game right now.
Well, after, actually, the inflammatory rhetoric that's been used, not just by the leader of this regime, but by his collaborators.
Yeah.
I think that we're entitled to question their cultural consumption of the very culture and cultures that they denigrate.
Exactly.
That they completely find offensive in many respects. Like, I think that it's a calculated move to, you know, be able to stroll into a Mexican restaurant after making a kind of public statement about why this policy, this heinous, inhumane policy of separating children from their families is, you know, the right thing and it's the law. Like, mm-hmm. I think you can't go to a Mexican restaurant. You're not allowed to have the food of the people whose rights you're violating.
Right.
When that happens.
Lindy, thoughts?
I just think that it's like you would tell a child at daycare, like, if you're not going to treat the country with respect, then you don't get to use it. Sorry.
So good for you, Red Hen. You are Margaret's all about, and we all love you a great deal. Next time I am in D.C., I am going to come for whatever lamb collar you are serving.
Well, they're in Lexington, Virginia. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we should all go there for garlic scapes.
Sounds magnificent. Toxin, what are you all about?
It's the Copa Mundial, der Weltmeisterschaft, otherwise known as the World Cup, everybody. And I have rearranged my entire life to watch the World Cup transpiring in Russian Standard Time or whatever it is. I love football, the beautiful game. And I have a real deep investment and had for many decades in Die Mannschaft, the German national team. But this World Cup has been very exciting to watch so far.
That is shocking to me, Karen. Brazil is representative of the beautiful game, the artful game. The German national team, they play like a machine. They are robots.
They have been non-machine-like since 2010. honestly, like, especially, actually, I mean, relative to what we were just talking about, you know, as the German team became less homogenous and, you know, included so many more, like, migrants and immigrants to Germany, like Mesut Özil, the great Turkish forward, even though he got into some trouble because he took a picture with Erdogan recently, you know, their game has really opened up and it's been really wonderful to watch. The most exciting group to watch is an Angelino right now is the group that Germany is in, because Mexico and South Korea are also in that group. And of course, Mexico is having a tremendous run, which means there are a lot of fireworks in my neighborhood at 7 in the morning, usually.
Well, I love that story that they made a kind of false earthquake happen in Mexico City, a collective scream and jump when they won over Germany.
Yeah.
Like, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mexico.
Yeah, now there's all sorts of exciting things like that happening. And also, it's one of the groups who still, the top two have yet to be resolved. Like, it's all going to go to the final match day. You know, Sweden's also in that group. Big deal. But you know, there's going to be some exciting stuff. Like, we're not going to know who the top two coming out of that group is. Mexico stands a great chance of moving on. Germany has to kind of fight for its life. We'll see what happens. But anyway, it's been really fun to watch. And anywhere that lets me in at 7 or 5 in the morning, I'm there. I've been watching in this lesbian bunker in Highland Park. Somebody converted their basement into a lovely pop-up bar, and that's been a really wonderful experience.
That's pretty amazing. That's so you guys are all getting together at like 4 in the morning or whenever.
Well, like, you know, 5 to 7, then we'll have like avocado toast and some rosé and watch the soccer.
Lesbian soccer speakeasy. We're pitching this. I just don't know whether it's reality to Bravo or scripted.
I think it has to be scripted.
I think so. Lindy West.
Hi.
Are you all about something this week?
This will become a theme throughout my appearance today. I'm finding making a television show to be very stressful.
Yes.
So I've been retreating into a cave made entirely of a television show called Grand Designs, which is on Netflix. Ooh. There's Grand Designs UK, Grand Designs Australia, which I just discovered. It's a whole new treasure trove of Grand Designs episodes. And all it is, each episode is an hour long. A man named Kevin, who's very enthusiastic about architecture. You know how American TV, it's like, I don't know, electric guitar, building a house, and then they just have, it's like there's no information. Yeah. It's just like 12 minutes long. So this is just like, they spend 20 minutes talking about the curve of the roof line and the trusses. And it's like, all I can do is stare at it. And I find it so soothing. And my favorite episode, it's so good. There's this man, I mean, perhaps a madman, in the UK, who is obsessed with an extinct building material called cob.
Oh, yes.
So he...
this guy knows what it is.
Yeah. So it's essentially piles of mud.
Yes.
And this man...
it's the Adobe of Europe.
Exactly. What? And so this man, he's the only person in Europe or in the UK who still can, like, come restore your cob house. Uh-huh. He's the only one that works with cob. And so he decides that he wants to build the world's largest cob house.
Does he wear, like, a jaunty little hat and, like, have a pipe?
I mean, I don't remember exactly, but pretty much. Yeah.
Did you check his feet? Is he a hobbit?
Yeah.
Kevin and his family have now been obsessively cobbing for 2 summers. September normally marks the end of the cob-laying season, but with the delays caused by the rain, they're still at it.
It is really quite desperate at the moment.
They're now well into the third floor, but cobbing this late in the year has its risks.
That's lovely. I am now going to talk about the thing that I am all about. We all have something of a concern that now that Netflix is churning out mediocre romantic comedies, I just every week am going to do a book report on this week's mediocre romantic comedy.
Love it.
It is a fair fear. But after Set It Up or The Setup or whatever the thing I talked about last week or 2 weeks ago was, I was dreading watching the gay teen rom-com that they have called Alex Strangelove. And then I watched it and I was about a quarter of the way through it, half of the way through it, like half-assedly watching it before I was like, oh, wait, this is good. And then I finished watching it and then went back and watched it from the beginning again. Glenn Weldon said it better than I did. He was like, this is Love, Simon, plus jokes and hormones and something else, culture, I think, maybe. But the thing that like really stopped me was when two boys were driving back from what one of them didn't realize was a date, Dusty Springfield starts playing. And my gut reaction is, we're not allowed to do that. Like, we have to show that they're young now. That should be something else. And then it's like, no, guy. Like, you know you. You know how actual gay teenage boys work. Gay 27-year-olds love Ariana Grande. Like, gay 16-year-olds, they love Linda Ronstadt or Dusty Springfield, or there's one moment in it where the two of them bond over the B-52s and not the B-52s you're thinking of. Dance This Mess Around. Like, they have a moment to dance this mess around. After it was done, I went online, figured out that it was made by a guy who's kind of a friend of mine, Craig Johnson, who made the Skeleton Twins. It continues to be, to suffer the disease of teen comedies. It takes place in generic upper middle class white suburb. Like, it does feel the need to tell you how generic and regular our protagonist is. And like, my big realization from watching it is the way that I think gay people, gay men particularly, are so used to moderating our identity for fear of what other people will think, that even when telling stories of our own, we kind of have an inclination of, but we can't do that. Like, we have to make this more relatable. We can't be this specific. And this film that didn't have a shit ton of specificity, but had enough, like, was really, truly beautiful. Like, like in Love, Simon, he really loves Radiohead. Like, it's that bad. I'm sorry, Margaret.
I had a tender spot for him just hearing that. But.
No gay boy would love Radiohead that much.
I know. This gay
maybe
boy,
a lesbian, but
this gay boy, like the romantic interest gay boy, does have like respectable indie pop group poster on his wall, but we don't have to talk about it. We just push through and enjoy the dulcet tones of Miss Dusty Springfield. Mm-hmm. So please, if you are a fan of teen comedies, rom-coms, check out Alex Strangelove. It's very, very good, and I look forward to like Netflix continuing to give us more of this, since God knows the box office can't make a rom-com anymore. Or a comedy, really. All right. You are listening to Pop Rocker. We're going to be right back to talk about Dietland after this.
Well, Adam, we're still putting out the Greatest Discovery podcast while we wait for season two.
What are we doing with these episodes?
We've talked to a whole bunch of interesting people, like the Wall Street Journal's Ben Fritz and MaximumFun.org's own Danielle Radford. We're kind of using this time to find ways to entertain ourselves and you while we wait for the next season.
So catch yourself up with Star Trek Discovery and join us Tuesday on The Greatest Discovery. It's on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocker. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
Karen Tongson.
Lindy West.
And in a second, we're going to talk about Dietland, the new TV show on AMC. It used to be a book. Margaret, do you have anything you'd like to say about a certain property that started out as a book?
Yes.
Does any title leap to your mind?
We are reading for the summer book club, Crazy Rich Asians. Have you guys started it yet?
Yes.
No.
Neither have I. we're going to talk about it in the middle of August, because that's when the movie comes out, and we're going to do a little like compare chart between what the movie does and what the book does. And because we have plenty of time, which is why I haven't started it yet either, you can read the whole series. But for now, we're talking about Saray Walker's Dietland, right? Which
yes.
was on one of the picks we could have had, but people didn't quite go for it.
But people shouldn't buy that book. They should buy Crazy Rich Asians so they can be part of the Pop Rocket Summer Book Club. Lindy, don't be left out in the rain come mid-August. Be part of the Pop Rocket Summer Book Club.
Please. I absolutely will.
Thank you.
All right. Earlier this month, AMC premiered the dark satire Dietland, which was adapted from Saray Walker's novel of the same name, and brought to the screen by TV veteran Marty Noxon, whom we love from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all sorts of great stuff. It's a revenge fantasy that revolves around Plum Kettle, a disgruntled plus-size woman who ghostwrites... I would prefer the term fat, and I think she would too, who ghostwrites an advice column for a glossy women's magazine. It's a show that taps into female rage, targeting abusive men, and all the shackles that hold women down.
That's me, Plum Kettle. But a crazy thing happened on the way to becoming my best self.
Are you following me?
I want you to go see someone.
Maybe it's the people who judge you who need to change.
Well, good luck with that.
You think it's impossible?
I think it would take a revolution.
I really enjoyed this show. Like, I knew nothing about it but the title. And when I sunk into it and I realized that it was something that was playing with a bigger, like, with more world-building power than we usually get for female-centered shows, I was delighted.
Yeah, it made me really happy. It feels like a certain kind of moment where it's like, oh, finally women have arrived in this type of way where we can have the beauty closet used as a reference for something supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
We can have fatness talked about as the main central tenet of the show. We can have an actress who is overweight and there on the screen in just about 90% of the show. Like, it just felt like so many wonderful hits. In addition to the fact that it's also surreal and complicated and just very, like, it's not an easy swallow, that show. Like, there's definitely mm-hmm. a lot going on, and I feel like it's just such, I don't know, it's a really triumphant moment, I feel like.
Yeah, I really appreciated its surrealness and the degrees of fantasy with which we afford to the central character, right? Because, to Plum, because so many male protagonists get to spin out into different fantasy worlds and experiences in many ways. And I think that a lot of female protagonists, you know, are kind of like hemmed to a certain kind of realism
yes.
or sentimentality
like
or, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's sort of like she can get lost in her visions, like JD from Scrubs, you know?
Yeah, or, like her mind is just as interesting as any man's mind.
Well, one of
where
my,
it goes.
I only watched the first two episodes, but one of my big realizations was like, imagination is one of the means of production. And it's been kept from women. Like, we feel this need for women to exist in something more like reality, and also lots of different marginalized people, and there are these systems of attack when you do have a black lead on Star Trek or like queer characters entering Star Trek. I watched Star Trek. But there was something so bold about, like, Sarai Walker says, I watched Fight Club and said, what is that for me? And like, that is such an exciting space.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, I feel like I've never seen a show about a fat woman that wasn't, where she wasn't just like a sad, frowny face on a scale. And like, it is that, like, it takes that and then it.
But what about the empowering journey of This Is Us?
I know, right? Exactly. Exactly. And like, what I love about Dietland is that, like, it not only is it not just that, it goes off the rails like so hard into so many other universes of crazy shit. It's like, I guess as a fat woman, it's like I've always felt so pigeonholed into this one thing. All you can be is like a sad person trying to lose weight. And it's like, fuck that, man.
Do you know anything about, I think her name is Joy Nash. Do you know anything about Joy Nash's origin story?
We're acquainted, but I haven't like grilled her about her. Are there special treats in there?
Well, just like, I was like, who is this person? And then I went online and she in 2007 made a YouTube video that was just like a rant about what it's like to be a fat woman. And it was, to me, just sort of wonderful that the actress who ended up in this place was somebody who had a voice of her own and was able to sort of like combine that voice with Noxon's voice and Walker's voice, and like that she just wasn't being used as an object or a tool.
I'm fat, and it's okay. It doesn't mean I'm stupid or ugly or lazy or selfish. I'm fat.
And also like a success story of a marginalized person saying, who's a performer saying, hey, I'm here. And like, maybe it's 10 years later, but fucking worked out, you know?
And she's also like so unassailably glamorous.
Yeah.
You know, like they kind of try to make her dumpy on the show, but like, she's so pretty, which I know isn't what we should be talking about, but it's just like, I love, like, it's not like she's pretty for a fat girl, which is how it always used to be framed.
Yes.
She's just like stunningly beautiful. And it, to me, there's something about that that like, you just can't deny it, and you can try, but you're gonna fail.
Yes.
Which I love.
Should we do a quick little plot summary for people who haven't caught up with the, you know, the concept or anything like that? Or
please do. Why don't you do the intellectual labor, Karen, since you have taken it?
Well, as you mentioned in the lead-in, our main character, our protagonist, Plum Kettle, is actually, you know, somebody who had spent a lot of her life being in school and writing, and now works basically as a ghostwriter, writing responses to letters to the editor of a high-powered female fashion magazine. Her boss,
but like a teen one,
yeah, like a teen one, like a kind of teen magazine. Her boss is named Kitty and is played by Juliana Margulies. And what starts to transpire, as we learn in the pilot, is that certain vigilante crimes are happening out in the world against men specifically who seem to have committed harassment crimes, raped women, who, there were a couple of dead bodies kind of found strewn about from like a radical organization that we identify, I guess, kind of later on that goes by the name of Jennifer. At least the name Jennifer crops up as something that's attached to that. So there is a kind of murder mystery plot involved alongside the kind of workplace drama, you know, like equal parts like Ugly Betty with the Devil Wears Prada, kind of the oppressed worker. And then on top of that, we have, as we've already been discussing, the kind of drama of Plum's efforts, desires to get some sort of stomach stapling surgery.
Well, she's very much a person who has internalized the messages that the world is giving her about her body.
Yeah.
That she is a thing that must be destroyed and remade, and that her life will be able to begin once that stuff happens. And it's really nice to have things like a hostile physician. Like, people frequently don't think about the extent to which receiving medical care as a fat person usually involves... frequently involves 20 minutes of
being lectured.
Like, let's just get through this so we can focus on what's going on here. But she's somebody who's taken the blue pill or whatever it is, like, who's really sort of like bought into the fact that she needs to stop being who she's always been. And there's something so delicious about dealing with so many characters who are just holding this tantalizing possibility of, like, maybe you are a human being.
I think that one of the things that happens in the episode beyond the pilot, which I guess is technically episode three, since the first episode takes up two episodes, is that she starts to, she basically quits an antidepressant cold turkey. And it explores these... she starts to get back in touch with her feelings in a really intense way. And so, she begins to experience certain hallucinations and fantasies. Like, oh, there's a reawakening of her sexual libido, which was kind of dampened by the why that she was taking. And, there's just all sorts of great stuff that... I don't want to spoil too much for people who haven't seen beyond the pilot, but...
But, I think, where there's that moment in any pilot where you just know you're in good hands? Mm-hmm. For me, it was that moment where she's in the Waste Watchers meeting. And, everyone's sitting around in a circle feeling bad about themselves. And this woman leader who's, like, stick thin, is kind of running the meeting and having everybody count their calories and blah, blah, blah. And in walks in this woman who looks a lot like Plum Kettle, but is like a totally different creation, like wearing this like leopard skin coat and fierce and sashaying. And she's like, I look good. I feel good about myself. Like, that was the moment for me where I was like, okay, this show's on to something.
I love myself.
Janice.
Oh, yeah. Screw this ass sucking crap. I came here to get some help losing weight because I have back problems, not because I hate my body.
Why don't we talk about this?
No, don't touch me, wench. I am a unicorn. I am a goddess. And I get more hot dick than I can handle.
Can I tell you when I fell in love with this show?
Yeah.
Okay. So Plum is having a 101 with her, one-on-one with her Waste Watchers sort of like group leader or whatever, a small thin woman. And she is talking about she went on the antidepressants during a period of depression in grad school. And the woman who has been condescending to her and will continue to condescend to her said, yeah, it was like that when I got my GED. And I realize being like, it's not great to be intellectually elitist or educationally elitist, but anyone who's listened to this for more than three episodes knows that I am. But just that experience of having people talk down to me intellectually because I was fat about things around food or nutrition or exercise or other things, assuming that just sort of like, because of my existence, I couldn't possibly understand these things. And having that moment where the show saw the irony of that and saw the gentle, like, prickle of who the fuck are you to talk to me like this? Not that people with GEDs can't be smart and great, but also I'm a fucking person too. Right. Talk to me like I'm a fucking person. Thoughts?
I agree. The scenes with that Waste Watchers coach were my favorite too.
Then let me ask you this question. I am formally on record as saying Tracy Turnblad is the greatest fat character we have in Western literature. Do you have anyone else who could compete? Do you think that Plum is up there?
She's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I've only seen that long pilot, but there's something, I mean, it's so relatable and beautifully done like beautifully observed. Uh-huh. All the little details, like people talking down to you, people acting like you don't exist. I was like, oh no, I have to cancel my show because they took all the stuff.
Well, I mean, and it's cool. It's so rare that a fat person gets to be good at something, and like her writing skill, which is like something that is within the realm of what people consider us as being part of what we do, but like her just being valued, that people were fighting over her, like just having the hero's journey be offered to a woman, let alone a fat woman, is just so rare. And there was something very like Joseph Campbell?
Yeah.
Very Joseph Campbell about that pilot.
I think that one of the things that I appreciate most is the kind of the multi-layered perspectives and around like what empowerment happens to be, or so the different kind of the different styles of feminist empowerment we see, also the different styles of empowerment around being fat that mm-hmm. like we see people grappling or struggling with or modeling. I like that that's all kind of interwoven together, because you know, like Plum has different choices, different paths to pursue around like, you know, she's very resistant to like being fat positive in many respects, even though there are a lot of people around her trying to get her to feel that way, but in a way that also can feel condescending or strange, mm-hmm. whether or not it's like her mother or saying, I just want you to feel beautiful, or, you know, it reframes that sometimes these affirmative phrases or these like affirmative approaches that we give to people about their femininity, about their appearance, about their size, like that sometimes that can feel patronizing and condescending as well. And all of the different styles of feminism that are on offer, and the ambivalences around these styles of feminism that we get from the kind of teen magazine, like, yeah. you know, affirmation, girl power situation to right. deep vigilante justice feminism.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that in the third episode, you see her go to this woman who, I'm not going to get too into it because I think it's a nice reveal, but you see her go to this woman who is sort of on the anti-diet tip, and trusting herself with this woman. And she's at the same time suspicious of this woman, and rightly so, because some of the things that and the woman is played by Robin Weigert, who I love. She played the therapist in Big Little Lies, also played Calamity Jane in Deadwood. Such a great actress. And she perfectly encapsulates that kind of like therapist who like you want to kind of lay your head in their lap, but at the same time you're like, I don't know.
Can I trust you?
Yeah. So there's a lot of layers there in terms of just like being a woman like Plum, who has been wronged and sort of stared at and laughed at a lot of times, and just not knowing who to trust, you know, mm-hmm. not knowing who you can, what sort of team of feminism you can even be.
Which
on.
Of these paths are going to resonate with you and feel right and just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think the other thing that that's really interesting in terms of the women's magazine angle is that, like, you know, they when they show the beauty closet, which, you know, for those who don't know, it's like the place in the women's magazine where all the products go, all the free
salves. It's where Stanley Tucci gives you a makeover.
Yeah.
Like all the serums and the shadows and the creams and the elixirs and whatever. And you go down there and, you know, everybody has that. I mean, I've seen those beauty closets at places like Cosmo, and like you go in and it's like the suitcase in Pulp Fiction where like the light just shines at you and blinds you and you're like, what is this? You know, it has magical powers. It feels like that.
It's interesting because like Handmaid's Tale was such a revelation when it came out in 85, was such a revelation when it was a TV show. But also, why do we have to use magic to tell like the story of how horrible it, to stylize how horrible it is for women, instead of using magic to let them get back? But also, what do we think of Juliana Margulies?
I love her. I think she's having a good time.
I never talk about this around here, but menopause, Perry in my case, you know me, always have to be first. Suddenly I had this middle. My chef had to cut absolutely everything white out of my menu. You can do things for the face, the body, even the hands, but the waist, you have to attack. Around here, you start looking like somebody's grandmother, you're out. Martha Stewart can get away with it. She sells hot glue guns, but tastemakers, no.
Mm-hmm. She's vamping in those red lips. She's totally embracing, like, the evil. I mean, she's evil, but I think there's definitely some good in there, or, mm-hmm. like, some kind of subversive element that's going to come out. I think one thing that's really fun about the show is the kind of Easter eggs in there about who the Jennifer's victims are. I mean, mm-hmm. one of them being, like, basically Terry Richardson.
You know?
Like, they have a different name, but the look is Terry Richardson. The scandal of it is Terry Richardson. The fact that he was embraced for so long by fashion magazines as accusations piled up against him over the years. And so it's like it's fun to see all that. It's a little bit of like, yeah, chickens coming home to roost.
When they can't remember the guy's name, somebody says Terrence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the Hunter Moore kind of revenge porn moment. Yeah. I think that was another one.
Mm-hmm. And you also get to see her, like Julianna Margulies, like, you know, she often plays someone good, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, like this kind of breaks Nurse Hathaway and Mrs. What's-Her-Face on The Good Wife. Mm-hmm. And she's using her, like, raw bonedness to, like, the most appropriate severe effect in the show.
She also plays such an interesting game of the mediocrity that is successful.
Yes.
She plays the character is written not the smartest. Like, she's not giving you Miranda Priestley. Because also, it's Julianna Margulies. She's got medium charisma. And I don't know that she could give you Miranda Priestley, but, like, this is such a masterful, like, you know, application of the skill set she has in the writing there, because you really do feel, I mean, because she's not that boss who's just demanding too much of you. She's also that boss who's a little bit dumb and doesn't realize the answer to everything and is, like, in her own head. Like, one of the really fun things about the show are the moments when not fat people police their own fatness in front of and around Plum. Mm. And it was one of the things that was really fun about watching that video from Joy Nash from years ago was it starts out with her playing a friend smoking a cigarette and complaining about how fat she feels when she has gained 5 pounds from stopping smoking cigarettes, and it just being like, shut up. Stop saying how much being like me is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, it goes, that goes so deep, like, in so many directions. Like, people want to say that they are on board with, like, I mean, to use myself as an example, like, the stuff that I write about, and, yeah, I totally support you. It's like, okay, I get that you support me. What do you do if your little tiny wife gets as fat as me?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? Because I bet you it's not as simple as you think.
Yeah.
You know, all of these ideas and the metric of women's value, women especially, but I mean everyone, mm-hmm. you know, it's deep. Like, it's not there deep.
It's not great in the gay male world.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Lindy West has been prodding at me to talk about that for years, and I haven't.
Yeah, I know. I'm irritated. But, you know, like, there's all kinds of people that are close to me, really close to me. And I, you know, I don't say this to them because it would be painful, but it's like, you would never date someone that looked like me.
Mm-hmm.
Because who you date has something to do with your image and who you think you are and how valuable you think you are. And you know, let alone, you can talk to me all day about how supportive you are of, like, me loving myself, but I see that you are restricting your food and you're, you know, doing everything that you can to avoid being like me. And again, if we're talking about bodily autonomy, you can do whatever. Obviously, I support you doing that if that's what you want to do. But there are just some deeper conversations that need to be had beyond just like, yeah, everyone should feel okay. Like, yeah, but we need to unlearn a lot of shit.
If we got rid of fat shaming and being weirded out by large bodies, how would that affect culture? What culture would we lose? Could we survive in a world that didn't have the Biggest Loser?
Yes.
Yes, of course.
I mean, yes, of course we can survive in a world without the biggest loser.
Loser contestants would survive a lot better.
I have a question for you. What were your feelings on Fashion Police?
It's been a long time since I've watched Fashion Police. It was hard to watch, but it was also so ubiquitous that I just had to, you know, live with the fact that it's the world that I, you know, when Fashion Police was on and when I was watching a lot of E,
mm-hmm.
I was like in high school and my 20s maybe. And I was still sort of in Plum's, you know, at like in Plum's land on mm-hmm. the journey. So I was not like, yeah, my body's fine and I'm not miserable. I was very much like, I need to turn myself into a different person so I can have a life. So, like, in that way, it's like, okay, part of living is owning the fact that my body's wrong and bad. And thank you, Joan, for reminding me in this extremely painful way. And, like, if I want to participate in life, in pop culture and in jokes and all the things that I love, I have to just swallow that stuff because I deserve it.
As time went on, she got better about, like, and it was only because she knew that she would get extreme blowback. But, like, fatness was a thing that she stopped directly ridiculing. Though I did include in my book one fat joke that I wrote about Adele, and I probably shouldn't have because people will get mad at me, but I was really proud of it. all right, final question on the topic. What steps forward, now that we've gotten to here, what steps forward for feminism in television need to happen? Like, what do you...
Small question, guy.
I'm sorry. You're my brain trust, okay? You're where I go for the big questions.
Gosh, where to move? I mean, the thing is that we, you know, again, this is something that's offering these multi-pronged perspectives, but I think that, you know, it would be interesting to see this world that we have in Dietland open up to people who are people of color as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, one of the things about it is that it presents a relatively kind of homogenous world right now of things that can almost kind of sit in the space of white people problems,
yeah.
right? And in white people jobs and things like that. There's like, there's the twofer of the black gay friend who has the coffee shop and the bakery. But what would it be like to encounter, also like in the kind of class framing of this, sure, Plum is kind of struggling with her financial situation right now in the way that the kind of underemployed freelancerati like have to like live. But there is something like, again, a kind of very limited about the circles in which all of this is happening and transpiring, where like you can be at once denigrated and saved within the same small cultural yeah. milieu. And I think that it would be interesting to see, you know, maybe something like Jennifer like be something bigger and broader than like a kind of white woman's crusade. So I mean, like, what kind of whiter name is there than Jennifer? Right? You know?
I think that's part of the joke of it, though,
yeah,
right?
I do
like,
think that
it's like
part
every
of the
woman
joke.
In a way. It's like the new Jane, like the
yeah,
80s Jane.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, but I do think that. But I do think that it would be fascinating because you know, like, there are different relationships that different cultures have to their bodies and mm-hmm. their sizes, and how would a different kind of perspective in that like milieu change it. So I don't know. I mean, I think that that's a way forward would be
to
find a way to mix
that. Do you think
that
those things could intersect?
Absolutely. I mean, come on. Obviously, I believe in the utopianism of intersectionality. I'm a gender studies professor, for Christ's sake.
I'm just tired of women in any media working at magazines. Not that I don't love the idea of working at a magazine, but publishing is dying, and girl, I've seen it.
But at least they're doing something. They're twisting it around.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
kind of yeah. having, showing the snake eating its own tail type of thing.
Yeah.
Also, I want to see this show, and it seems like it's laying the groundwork for this, but I want to see this character be sexual.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I want to see her have sexual relationships that are unapologetic and bold and happy and whole and all of those things. I mean, I think that that's where we need to go next is like, okay, now we see a character like that and she gets to be smart and she gets to be capable, but does she get to be sexual?
And I think that one of the things that they've been indicating is that like her forays into sexuality might indeed be inappropriate or like bad, like in a way that's like scintillating and like kind of just as fucked up as everybody else's forays into sexuality and not
yeah.
just like this kind of affirmative, like, you know, like she gets to get laid or whatever, but like
yeah.
it's just like, oh, like she's might engage. I mean,
I don't mean to make it
or light spoiler, but like, I think that there's going to be like a problematic sexual encounter.
Yeah, I don't mean to make it sound like she can only have like positive sex. You know what I mean?
That was
it's just to be the whole complicated person. Yeah. Sexually.
The other part of the multifaceted that was interesting was when she had the conversation with the detective about the cake and. Like, my spider sense had to go off for, oh, is he one of those? Because you want to know what? I met those.
I think one thing that you and I have talked about before is that, that I would love to see is that women never get to be gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, like, men get to be disgusting and, like, we love it. And well, women are just as disgusting.
There was something so interesting.
I don't know what you're talking
maybe
about.
Not, maybe not quite as disgusting, but almost.
About the way that they shot her with the like medical robe on and open in the back, it was both supposed to imply the humiliation of the situation and sort of be sort of like classically Rubenesque and artistic, the sort of like cleft of the buttock, but also it isn't just body ownership of the sort that guys get.
Mm-hmm, totally. I mean, I don't know. It's like you want to see the good and the bad, and you want to see women's stories that aren't just the story of someone like claiming their power and getting over their insecurities and their, you know, their civil rights struggle or whatever. We make pieces of media about the minutia of men's lives that is so minute. I mean, minute minutia. The minutia is super minute. You know, and we don't do character studies of women in that same way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see that, too. I would love to see boring stories about women. And again, I mean, like you said, more... less white, more queer, more, you know...
Or more mixed, like just people hanging out with each other. Like
just like people doing stuff.
That are just so homogenous, you know?
Yeah.
You guys, we could not end this without a quote from Ms. Jen J. Walker on this subject.
Jen J.
Dietland is so good. Love seeing my size as a lead and seeing two fat women in scenes together and talking to each other. And that's also...
That's a good, like, sort of Bechdel test. Yeah. Like another ripple on the Bechdel test.
Just being able to not be the blank one. And Nellie Elliott says, do you think...
Or Nellie Allure.
Oh, sorry. Nellie Allure says, do you think It Dietland qualifies as fautige? I haven't read the novel, so I'm not sure, but I think it's simply not taking itself too seriously. Fautige?
Not fautige.
Not fautige.
Do you know what fautige is?
Nope.
Faux prestige television. So, American Gods as opposed to Game of Thrones.
Got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
I don't know.
I'm saying it's not fautige television.
I agree with Nellie that it doesn't take itself too seriously and therefore...
Yeah, and it's also doing big things in interesting ways. It's not echoing tropes of other...
It's making big gestures.
It's funny about it. Like the fact that the detective appears as like a sexy tiger leader.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back after this.
Following the news is hard and it sucks.
How do you know which stories are important?
Which sources do you trust in this post-truth world of reactionary journalism?
I'm Brett Black.
And I'm Travis McElroy.
And we host a podcast called Trends Like These.
We cover trending news stories.
We debunk misleading clickbait headlines.
And we always try to throw in a little bit of good news.
In our quest for truth.
So join us every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I am your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
Karen Thompson.
And me, Lindy West.
And you, Lindy West. You probably don't know this, but every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? So I will turn now to Ms. Margaret Wappler, and I will ask her, with respect and dignity, Peggy, what's your jam?
I don't know what to do with this Peggy thing.
What's up with the Peggy thing?
It's terrible. I just think that that's a stupid nickname for that. I'm wondering that it never came to my mind until this moment.
Like, it's a nickname for Margaret?
Yes. And I love Margaret as a name so much.
Thank you.
I mean, we all know about my feelings about Ms. Thatcher.
Yes.
And
Princess Margaret.
And Lady Margaret Hall. and the Lady Margaret who it's named after, who was Henry VII's mom, I think.
Sure.
But as I said, Peggy, What is your jam?
Well, I always shut down the name Peggy. Thank you very much. But yes. Anyway, I was kind of, when the Carters announced that they had their new album, I was a little bit like, I don't know if I need to hear more about their relationship right now. Like, he's had an album, she's had an album. That's good for me. But I knew I was going to listen to it, and I did, and it's really good. And there's a song on there called Nice that I really like. And it's produced by Pharrell, which gives me good feelings because I was looking around at the summer jam season, and I was like, where the hell is he?
Yes.
Like, there's a few people I need to be accounted for, and he was not around. I mean, he's got this Sangria Wine song, but it's just not quite, it's like, not hitting me.
Margaret. You know the truth.
Yeah, it's kind of like white wine sangria. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know. I fucking love white wine sangria.
Slices.
Take that back.
Right.
Boom. White wine sangria should be stone fruits, Karen Tong said. I will fight you over this.
Fruits, and then I can deal, but do not put that apple slice
exactly.
in there.
No, exactly. I said no apple slices.
Yeah. Okay, so this is Nice. And it also features Beyonce talking some shit about Spotify.
But if I gave two fucks about streaming numbers, would have put lemonade up on Spotify. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. Fuck you. I'm out. I ain't never seen a ceiling in my whole life. That's word to blue. Freestyling life.
Freestyling life. I mean, come the fuck on. You just cannot, you cannot shit with that jam.
I mean, it's very good. I like Beyonce, but also there is this place of intellectual exercise rap. That I'm not the hugest fan of.
What is intellectual exercise rap?
Like,
can I do it at Heartbeat House or any of the gyms I go to?
No, I mean the stuff that feels like contemplative, but not like toe tapping. And we all know I like toe tapping too much, and we all know that I want Pharrell to give me his toe tapping.
Yeah.
And I understand that people have to do things that are more challenging and interesting for them. And having Beyonce tell fuck you to Spotify, fun. Ms. Thompson?
So I'm loving the chill out vibe of a song called Cruel from the Baltimore-born Globetrotter, the half Ghanaian and half Ugandan Julia Kwamya, who has the band name Germans, apropos my World Cup talk earlier. And what I love about this song is it grooves on 80s vibes. She's very much pulling from the kind of Tears for Fears, 80s Bowie, Roxy Music catalog with dreamy bossa nova forays from the likes of Duran Duran, Wham, etc. I'm just giving it to you. You're going to tell me it's a cocktail song. Here is Cruel. Swing Out Sister.
I was going to say Swing Out Sister. But I was going to tell you why, Karen, you're wrong to say that I would say that that was, I was like, this is a very 1986, very Swing Out Sister. No, it's a good time.
It's a good time. It's like, great. I mean, Swing Out Sister had a really great moment on the most recent episode of Pose. There's a really great.
I still haven't seen it.
It's so good. Anyway, that is from Germans 2013 debut. Go check it out on Spotify, despite what Beyonce says.
Will I like the rest of the album?
It's mostly just like little, like it's an EP. So like there are other like really cool tracks that Germans has.
That sounded very creamy to me.
Very creamy.
Very buttery.
Ms. West.
So as I said earlier, that this would come up again.
Let me ask.
What? Oh, sorry. What? God.
It's a terrible. Go ahead, sir.
No, let's do it again. You do it.
Ms. West, what is your jam?
So my jam is a classic, an eternal classic. As I mentioned earlier, I said this would come up again. I'm very stressed out right now, both in my job and also just due to the political climate. And so I find it very difficult to listen to anything other than Don't Worry, Be Happy on repeat on my Spotify. It's not because the song is telling me to not worry and to be happy, but that I find the virtuosity of Mr. Bobby McFerrin to be very life-affirming. Like, you know, it reaffirms my faith in humanity and that beautiful things are possible. Also, I feel like sourpusses want to take hot dumps on this song, and they're wrong. And I think it's hacky to not like this song. I think it's boring. The song's good.
I will stand by anything on the Cocktail soundtrack.
Thank you.
Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
Everybody forgets what a genius, though, Bobby McFerrin, like, I mean, he is. Like, I mean, everything on that album, not just Don't Worry, Be Happy, but it was all a cappella. Like, he's an incredibly gifted a cappella artist, you know, with a huge range.
There's no instrumentation on that.
Yeah,
it's just Bobby McFerrin.
Not at all. Him,
it's all
right?
A cappella.
It's, like,
yeah.
It's all vocals.
It's all a cappella. And that whole album that Don't Worry, Be Happy was on is also that. And he was also a very well-respected jazz artist before he had this huge hit. So, yeah, don't shit on Bobby McFerrin. He's an American treasure.
Also, those lyrics are good.
Yes.
Yeah.
What about missing a bed? Like, what?
It's such a good line.
Yeah.
Like, the landlord say your rent is late, he may have to litigate. That's a great rhyme.
Yeah.
That is a hot, hot rhyme.
Yeah, Jay-Z would be proud of that.
That is a beautiful, I mean, I would say probably the summer jam of 1988. And what a great way of bringing us to my jam, because I am concerned about this summer. I'm concerned about this summer's capability to provide us with a jam.
Looking bleak a little bit.
Then there is somebody who has been really hitting shit out of the park every time a ball comes at her, and that is Ms. Lizzo with Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Baby, I don't need you. I just wanna freak you. I heard you a freak too. What's 2 + 2?
Would Worship Me be a stronger summer jam contender? Absolutely. But this song is really giving me way more. I have to listen to it 30 more times before I have a strong take on it. It's so good. And have you seen that fucking video?
No.
No.
It's wonderful. It's Lizzo dancing with Lizzo dancers in a way that is, like, beautiful and delightful. But there are also moments when she is nude that are delicious. That aren't, can you believe what I'm doing? It's just Lizzo owning herself and not understanding that she has to meet anybody else's standard.
The summer vibe that song is giving me is dancing in the daytime in a dark bar, but with the exit door slightly ajar with like a little flash of light in that darkened hallway where people are about to make out or puke.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh my
so
God,
that
Karen,
is what I'm feeling from that
will
song.
Will you please write a short story with that as the intro?
Well, also, your point is valid that I have some bigotries when it comes to summer jam aesthetics, and we all know I love a West Coast or Caribbean summer jam.
You
and
do.
This is a Brooklyn flavored summer jam, but one that is candy coated enough that it works for me.
And it's a little, it's not too far from the other jam that people want to be a summer jam, Make Me Feel by Janelle Monáe, which came out too early.
Yeah.
But this has a little bit of that same beat, that same vibe, that same kind of princy, action happening. And I don't know. I feel like I'm feeling like it's a good contender.
I love Lizzo so much. I worry about what happens to Lizzo for no good reason. But part of me gets scared that she'll have to be on a celebrity singing show within the next 5 years.
No.
And she's just making so much good shit.
I feel like Minneapolis has got her back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that's a place that just doesn't let their stars fail. They're just like, they'll just support her forever.
And I mean, she's a goddamn hit machine. All right. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Margaret Wappler, Karen Tongson, and Lindy West. Now, Lindy West, if people wanted to learn more about you, where would people do that?
Well, I have quit Twitter due to the crumbling of our democracy.
But could people listen to a This American Life story about why you did quit Twitter?
Yes, they could, Guy Branum. They can find all kinds of information about me at lindywest.net. Because lindywest.com was taken by some woman who's not even named Lindy West.
Uh-huh.
What?
Yeah, she just lives west of somewhere?
I don't know. It just redirects to her band.
Oh.
you want to plug your book so the rest of us can plug our books and it won't seem gross?
Sure. I wrote a really good book, a New York Times bestseller.
Dang.
Yeah. It's very good.
Called Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman. It's available at bookstores. and it is about all the most embarrassing things that have ever happened to me.
It's very good.
Thank you.
You know, Margaret wrote a very good novel.
That is called Neon Green. You can get it at fine bookstores near you or the Amazon.
I was at that bookstore in Echo Park and I walked past it and I got excited.
Stories.
Yes.
And Guy Branum, I believe you have some kind of text coming out soon.
I do. My Life is a Goddess, a memoir through on popular culture, will be available July 31st. Pre-order your copy today. Everyone in this room is thanked in the book, and even Swisher, too.
Nice.
Karen Thompson, you got a book coming out.
You can buy my first book, Relocations, Chris of Relevant Imaginaries.
Wait, you just mumbled that title. Say it with pride.
Relocations, Queer Suburban Imaginaries. And it will give you all sorts of amazing feels. It's not a dry academic book. Also, my book on Karen Carpenter and why Karen Carpenter matters and why I, being named after her, matter. Also, is coming out January 2019. So just listen to Carpenter songs until then.
I mean, that's not a hard prescription. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. It keeps Margaret healthy. Margaret, how's your organ function?
Pretty good. I've been on the probiotics lately. Those are really great. They make me burp sometimes, but it's all good.
We've got 2 reviews, so that's clearly why you're doing okay.
Yeah.
Make Me Smiley says, this podcast is always must listen. The hosts discuss pop culture in a smart, critical, but always entertaining way. And ShirtUGal90 says, I seriously wouldn't be able to get through my week without y'all. As a drag queen, y'all keep me updated on the world so I can make my performances more topical.
Wow.
And help to point me towards literature that is worth my time.
I love that review.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for your wit and how much you care about the world around us. ShirtUGal90, we need to know what city you are performing in, so if we are there, we can show up.
I want to see your Cold War outfit for our Cold War episode.
Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join on our Facebook group and get in the discussion. And of course, that Instagram, which we left fallow for so long, is now bearing mighty fruit, thanks to 2 of the people in this room, but not me. We are a production of Maximum
Fun. At Pop Rocket Podcast.
At Pop Rocket Podcast. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our show is edited by Julian Burrell. I don't know that I've met him. And our producer is Laura Swisher, whom I have met a lot of times, let's be honest.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.